This recording is a production of the Conservative Anabaptist Education Committee. This presentation was recorded at Conservative Anabaptist School Board Institute 2022, held at Horizon Mennonite School in Hagerstown, Maryland, on March 4 and 5.
Challenges and opportunities of a smaller school. So we all have different situations, different challenges, different opportunities, and so the goal this morning is to learn from each other. So I'm going to kind of break the ice, talk about a few things that I've experienced. The handout that I gave you, you can jot down as we go along. If somebody has a question on, or there's something that you experienced in your school you'd love to share, I'd like for you to feel free to do that. So, I said I'll skip the flowing. It flows better if I can walk around and wave my hands and engage with officers. We'll try that. Now, the first thing I've done here is facility. Okay? So when I first went out to Iowa to teach, I walked through the door of the school, and I was taken aback. I was used to fairly, like, larger schools with a nice facility. And this school had been built 30 years before I got there. And some of the men in church had a vision for a school. Not everybody was on board with it, but they made it happen. So it happened pretty quick. It was fairly inexpensive. And they put up a school and they had school. But over time, there's like a floating pad. You guys do construction, what I'm talking about. So that means as time happens and the seasons come and go, freezing and thawing, so things move and things shift, and there's a big huge crack down the middle, and the doors hang a little crooked, and you have to keep shaving it once in a while so it closes, and you get all this stuff, and the chairman was showing me, well, this is our gym area. This is the gym. And I thought he was joking, just about that. I was glad they didn't, because it's got like 7 foot ceilings, and it's maybe a fourth the size of this room. But that was what we had to work with. And one of the things that I would like for us to think about with facility is try to have a good facility, take care of it, but make sure that you communicate to your teachers that this is what we have to work with, and let's do a good job with it. Because the last thing I wanted to do coming as a teacher was, you guys need to get a new school, you need to rebuild the stuff to do a better job, right? So there's a lot of value in enthusiastic, creative use of the resources available to you until something is better. And that sometimes is a vision that we have to cultivate and have to develop. On the flip side, we'll talk about this a little bit later, there are some unique opportunities with some of those less than ideal facilities. Some creative ways that you can use those. Think a little bit about staff. A lot of times, in a small school, it feels like you don't have the resources, the staff resources, to cover everything well. So sometimes you have to get a little bit creative with that, with your class size. If you're doing a class type of model, you have one student in class, or 20 students in class, you still takes the same amount of time to teach the lessons. So one thing we've done is we've added together and not taught everything every year, just because it helps with your personnel structure there. And reaching within your reach. Discussions in class, being able to engage the students and talk about things that are relevant to them. Sometimes you can do more of that, I think, with a smaller class, because if you've got 20 students in the class, they all want to tell you what their family did last week. You don't have time for that. But I think you can, there's room for some of that with a smaller class. That is an opportunity. And the teacher efficiency, I mentioned that. monthly classes. One thing we've done also is help maximize the teacher's time is had older students help us with the younger students. Excuse me. But I think we have to be a little bit careful with that. In some ways, it seems like, well, we can just, instead of hiring the teacher, let's just get the older students to help. But you have to be careful because there is a fine line between having them help out and having them do the teaching. And there have been times when I came back and repaired some of the errors that my older students propagated in the younger students. So get them to help, that can relieve some pressure and take care of those students, but make sure you don't have them doing the teaching. So recreation can get a little bit interesting when you don't have the people. When I started teaching school, we had, I think, 20 students in the school, 10 teachers. Some of you come from smaller schools than that. And so it's a little bit difficult to play softball when you've got six on the side. But there are creative ways you can do that. There's some other games that we did a lot at our school. One of them is what we call trees, some people call kill leagues. It doesn't take a lot of setup, and everybody enjoys it, and it's easy to start. It's really simple as a game we play at camp, and it can be as intense or as relaxed as you want it to be, as your students want it to be. Another game that we play, which lends itself well to the low ceiling play area we have, which, we went from 20 students to 40-some students, and so recess looks more like a war zone than recess, you guys know what I mean. But it's a game called Punch Ball. And so it's like, use one of those soft rubber balls, not like a four-square ball, but real light ones, and you toss it in and you hit it with your hand, you punch it. And so it can ricochet off the walls and whatever, and you get the person out by either stepping on the base or hitting it with the ball. And so most times you can throw the ball at it and you can dodge, and it gets pretty wild. But again, we discovered that that's a game that works better with fewer people. And so when I had 24 students in my class and we tried to play punch ball, we had to make some new rules and had to be a little creative. And there were a few casualties along the way. The big student was heads high on the goal, and something else was going after the ball. A game that I haven't actually been in on it because I just started this year is what they call big four squares. So they take the play area and they divide it up into four squares. And so some of the four squares you're using the whole room. So you can ricochet off the walls. If there's a ball you can't get to, you'll have a prayer bring it back. You just whale it, it'll come off the wall and go back over into somebody else's square. And they say they had a lot of fun with that. And again, like I said, it gets pretty intense. School activities, one of the things that I'm always fascinated by is how much the students enjoy doing things as a whole school. Even when we had like 40 students, they didn't want to play big trees, all school trees. And we have a tradition to do that several, at the beginning of the year and the last week of school, sometimes we're a little part of the time to spend playing all together, all school trees. And they really enjoy that. And one of the pros I feel of having smaller schools, you can do more of that. You have the older students that help the younger ones. I remember back when we didn't have many students, we had some special rules when we did play softball. First graders couldn't be thrown out at first base. So they were guaranteed if they could hit the ball, we tried pretty hard to help them hit the ball. They got to go to first base, and then we kept going from there. It helps the students remember why we play games. Yeah, it's not professional level softball, and some people are a little frustrated with that. But it's a growing experience. Why do we do sports? To have fun and learn to work together. Okay? And so it's not about winning, it's not about dazzling people, but it's about knowing. And it's an opportunity to help our students grow to that. I feel, when you don't have the personnel and maybe the resources to do it right. School culture. Your school culture is going to be shaped by your facility and the opportunities that you have. One of the unique things about our school is we have, in the Midwest, there are these little striped critters that look kind of like a chipmunk, but they're called ground squirrels. And they dig holes, and they make mounds, and they're really annoying. Well, this was entrenched in the culture before I got there. But we don't like ground squirrels, okay? So when you see a ground squirrel, what they want to do is they want to go in and grab 5-gallon buckets and baseball bats, and they go out and they dump water down the hole, and the poor guy comes squirting out, and then you have this mob chasing, and they're trying to get in, and it's it's pretty fascinating. When, like, the girls want to be in on the action, but they don't want to be right in the middle of the action, okay? So the ground squirrel's running, and the guys are right on it, and they're doing their thing, and suddenly the ground squirrel sees what's happening, so he doubles back. Oh, where'd he go? And so all of a sudden he's heading back into the girls, right? And whoo, that really creates some drama. And I almost got frustrated with this, because, you know, we're trying to have school. Hey, there's a ground squirrel, there's a ground squirrel. Let's talk about man. So if you can't beat him, join him, right? So we had ground squirrel. It's okay. Today, we're going to be doing our work. But anybody that sees a ground squirrel, all he needs to do is yell, ground squirrel, and you guys drop everything and we're going to beat, right? Or just one day. It was a smashing success. It was amazing. I'm not sure how hard we actually had ground squirrel population. We got a few, but we definitely had fun making memories. And then the ladies are like, okay, no, we're working on sport now. We'll leave those for C. That's one of the unique things that happens at our school. Resources, and then finances, volunteers, and other options. One of the things that our school does is we have the board handle money. He talked about several different models. The principal doesn't do anything with the funds. I'm a teaching principal, full-time teacher, so I need to focus on the students and help with school run. And so that really relieves a lot of pressure on me. I don't worry about the bills. I don't do anything with the money. And there are various ways to structure that, if you whatever works for your school. But make sure you're not asking the teachers to be super, because it's get spread pretty thin, and you only have so much energy you can manage it. So, a few things that I talked about. How our school does it, what are some questions, what are some observations and challenges that you all face?
Yes? I have two playground suggestions. We're a small school as well. And one game that we play is called Mad Ball. It's kickball, but you never force anyone out. You have two or three people in the same base, so when you have a first grader gets on first, and a high schooler comes along and kicks, he can pass that first grader and keep right on going. And so it relieves a lot of pressure. They're not forced to the next base.
As long as we don't have a collision, right?
Right, yes. And the second thing, if you wonder about playing softball with 12 people, we do three teams of four, mm-hmm. and have an outfield, one team's on the outfield, one team's on the infield, and one team's back. And they rotate that way. That's worked well.
Excellent. Any other comments or questions? Yes?
So we have a small school, and one of the things that we're trying to work with the teachers is trying to get them out of recess time with students. You know, things are too busy, and it's a small enough school that if one or two teachers can generally monitor it, is there any comments or suggestions on how much
any comments on that? I have an opinion about it. Together. How much should they push the teachers to get out at class at a break?
They need to be out there, one of them. Dick Turner's role. Someone needs to be out there.
Our school also has a schedule, and there's more people in our recently.
I would echo what they're saying. If you, the opportunity to do something with your students, build a relationship that's not academic, is crucial. I mean, yeah, you've got the important stuff that needs to be done, but if you can help them have a vision for how impactful that playtime is with the students, you're putting capital in the bank you can draw on for difficult situations down the road. It's crucial. I'm probably wired that way. Anyways, it's easy for me to make that case, but yeah, help them understand that you're investing in the students. You can't afford an obstacle. I mean, I know sometimes there's maybe a student has to stay in and you have some extra work and there's all this stuff to do, but the students need to know that you enjoy them, you want to be with them, you care about them, and that's going to go so far towards helping the rest of them as well. Yeah, good observation.
At what point can you not afford to have a man teach you?
At what point can you not afford to have a man teach you? Any comments? I'm convinced of the benefits of having a man. We have usually run 5 or 6 staff at this point. I'd like to see 2. Just for the balance of things to it. It's not always possible. I think it's crucial, but at the same time, you have to work with what you have. Do you want to expand on that at all?
I'm talking about a startup school with 10, 12 students. Mm-hmm. 2 teachers would do it. Is it okay to have some sisters or ladies? What about if you have a 15, 16-year-old boy in there? Should not be a man. At what age in a student you put a man in there?
Yeah, our school has always had a man for high school, 7th grade, 8th grade. Any input from y'all? What? How do you discern what age?
I grew up in a school where it was used to late teacher grade 1 to 5. Thinking back on that relationship with the partnerships, this thing that high school is probably wouldn't have done.
So you're saying you're bored with a lot of headaches. Do you have a comment? Did y'all hear that?
No.
Okay. So basically you said your school has a man teacher of younger grades and feel like it's brought some balance to it. You've seen some ladies who did better than some of the men with high school. And I might ask you to clarify what you're talking about. their teaching technique, or are you talking about their keeping order and discipline?
A little bit of both.
Some of both.
Some of both. But that's, I don't want to paint with a broad brush.
Right.
I think there's exceptions on both sides.
Doesn't want to paint with a broad brush, there's exceptions on both sides. I think it'd be ideal to have it in high school. Back to your comment, one of the things that can happen, and it happened to a certain extent in this school that I'm teaching at before I was teaching there, and two ladies teaching there, was one for me. The guy's restroom was off limits, and so they weren't going to go in there to string anything out, and it kind of became, not quite my man's land, but it wasn't that good. And so, yeah, I think that's good if you just have a manual step. So I don't know if that give you any.
I think it's important,
right,
to have the managers in the camp or cleaners getting the paddles before. If one year, for some reason, we could not find a high school teacher, and we had an older lady that had taught a number of years, our school board chairman showed up at least once a week and did something with the boys, talked to them, was there for several hours at the week. And that worked. I don't think we ran the whole year we were waiting on a teacher.
Yeah, so I would say if you don't have a man teacher, try to have someone involved enough that they can at least play with school a bit.
Back to Keith's idea, if you don't have a man in high school, even having one in the lower grades is going to fulfill some of those needs. He's in the paper.
And
seeing yourself the rest of the problems.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It just seems like there's a, boys get to a certain age, and it's just hard to take orders from a lady. I mean, even if you like her, respect her, it's just, we're trying to figure out what it means to be a man. It's
complicated. So we're at a little next level where we have a man in the high school room, and we also have a young man in the grades 5 through 7. This worked well this past year, but now we want the young man long term. Obviously, pay is going to have to go up. So how do you know when to keep two men in? Somewhat ideal helps share the responsibility. We have 35 students. It's not like one man can't handle it, but it does share the chat four times on the kind of setup. But yet, financially, we're going to run into a problem. So if we have some discussion on that, do we ask for a bigger offering? I see business or school different than running a business. Not our product, but in schools, more efficient things. Do we ask for a few large business managers to help donate to the salary fund? I guess the question that would have.
Yeah. So this, you have an input for you. Did y'all hear that? Yeah. So what are some ideas for some ways we can meet that challenge?
I think about it as a business owner. If I had an employee that was doing very well at his job, he was off and more somewhere else, and he came to me and said, can you bump my pay up a little bit more? If I liked what he was doing, I would try my hardest to keep him. And I think too often times we look at the schools at a challenge like that and say, well, we can't afford to pay our teachers. But in the business world, we don't see good employees that way.
Yeah, so kind of what you're saying is figure out a way to keep.
I think a lot of times we do ourselves a disservice by looking at it as an expense instead of an investment.
Excellent.
When I have something for my business that's going to improve my productivity and make my quality of my work better, I'm going to do it. For I've got a long-term vision for my business. Mm-hmm. So I would say I'm against thinking how to come to people to help make more money. You're better off educating your community and getting everybody.
You're exactly right, that takes time. So
it does. It takes work. It can be done.
Any other ideas?
I would say if your church runs school, as much as possible, keep the whole church involved. Even if they don't have children in the school, keep them involved somehow. Keep them coming to do some of the things, special events or something like that. And then share the need.
So, one thing I might clarify on your dilemma is, you guys, are you a tuition, church, or hybrid?
We're over the hybrid. The church, okay. We get a recommended bill, but then we would take church offerings, and people that are not from our church would get a cost of child, and our tuition does not quite cover that cost of child. Mm-hmm. Most of those scholarships, one of the favorite didn't have a scholarship, one that helps out with that.
Yeah.
So what he's getting paid now is not enough. Let's say if he gets married in the next year or two. And what I would love to see is that we as a community step up and say, hey, look, we're willing to up it. But the problem I see is, let's say cost of child is $350. Well, now if we're going to take this salary from X salary up to where married men should be sustainably, now that tuition has to go way up. And it's a different quality I see out. Struggling with the we don't have a good fundraiser option, it seems like. So to create money in school, I see this a problem that we face.
One idea might be not to try to jump in right away and give your people sticker shock, but to be able to start moving that way as an agenda. And with a business, you can always justify it because of the value of your retail product. It pencils out, but they're not paying for graduates, so it's kind of an intangible investment. But it takes time to need to educate people.
Don't we value our product?
We should.
See, that's why I said long term vision. If you're one of that teacher, you need to start right now. You need to start up, even though you might not be doing this pay for your money to be in 2 to 3 years, you need to start working toward that and have everybody see where you want to go to this school. And it becomes the work responsibility to educate the community and work together to make that goal possible.
One other possibility is if I'm assuming your teachers are not salaried year round.
Correct.
So if, like some of the businessmen we're talking about, if he could find a job at a place that could pay him fair wage, maybe an above market wage, or he can build more, it'll help him. So the bottom line at the end of the year for him personally doesn't look as bad as he's just depending on the school salary and then working a minimum wage job during the summer. But we can kind of buffer that without necessarily it all having to come from the school. But I like the idea of, I think it makes sense to help build community awareness and say, you know, let's invest. There's something that I find interesting. Scripture says, where your treasure is, there will your heart be. Okay? So your heart follows the money. So if you want to value something, put your money into it. Okay? It seems like it should be the other way. The things I really care about is where I put my money. But according to Scripture, your heart follows the money. And so when I came to teach, the community had some frustrations and issues, and so there's a memo on the board that says, look, we get what we pay for. If we want to have somebody who does a good job, who's going to be there for a while, we got to pay. And that was kind of a revolutionary thought, because they were running on the, you know, let's do this as cheaply as possible kind of thing. So when I quit working construction and went to teach in school, I really didn't take a pay cut, which was unusual for that time. It was 20 years ago. But I think it's that vision is part of the reason why I'm still there. Because they, and the interest and the caring about the school seems to have really improved over the last 20 years, you know. I don't know that that's just a reflection on me, but I think it goes back to that thing of the money.
Right, I mean, I agree with what I'm hearing. It takes a lot of work. The biggest problem I see is, okay, so for the business owners, me and my brother-in-law together, so it's too deep for another person to convince. Well, at a church school,
yeah.
get them on board with you or your school board person.
Start talking right now. And where I think it really started changing was when, because they didn't have high school before I got there. So they didn't want to offer high school. But when the local church saw graduates, you get up to have devotions for the first time, and everybody expects them a little bit later. But they're comfortable talking in front of people, they had outline, they knew they were going, they had a point like, he had high school. You know, we have a full song here where you can alternate between not two of them. But suddenly there's, you know, we've got a whole bunch of options that they do well with. They're not perfect, but they're comfortable, they can do well. It's like, you know, the school is really helping the church out. And that's a connection that I think we need to make because I feel they're struggling. School is an investment in the church. In the church of tomorrow, but also the church of today. Because we can get those young people engaged and hold their weight. That's a tremendous asset. Yeah. Yeah, maybe it's out that.
The thing of paying teachers is also a step to take. I've been on the school board now probably 10 years. And when we budget, it doesn't depend on how often we work. We determine to pay our teachers so we can teach them. And it's surprising how it works out. Start the year. Money keeps coming in, and it's just a blessing to see that here.
Good point.
We have a young school. It is still a base.
Just another comment on the school and church. So I think it's important in our small church communities that we are foster the idea that the school is the arm of the church. Not a separate entity. You might just kind of operate as a separate entity in some cases, but as much as we can, you know, do that connection. Just to your point, you were making earlier.
We also share a comment that a friend of mine made. We were, at that point, he was a single fellow. And his church said, we're going to support the school at the church. So everybody got assessed. If you were a church member, you got an assessment. I forget how long they had a system to deal with it. They tried to be fair with it. I think it was maybe in relation to your knowledge you were making, etc. But he says, when it first happened, he was like, I'm a single guy. Why do I need to be paying for a school? But he was trying to have a good attitude. And he put money in with him. He said, you know, something happened. He said, I started caring more about the school. I was interested in what was happening. You see, his heart followed the money. And so I see tremendous value in that. And if we can invest well, I think there's value in it. But how do you get to invest well? Right? Any other questions? Utilizing the facility, as the number of students got bigger, we had to be more creative with games when the weather was bad outside because we didn't really have options. So one of the things we came up with was we would take the play area and we would set rows of chairs back to back, and then we'd play balloon soccer. So you couldn't use your feet. You had to keep your bottom on the chair. You couldn't jump up. But we pass the balloon back and forth and try to get it in the goal at either end. We had a lot of fun with it. It was just one creative way of utilizing our space. And one of the things that I want my students to learn is that you don't have to have state-of-the-art facilities and equipment to have fun. It's about your attitudes. It's about putting yourself in there. We've all been part of a game where you, it's going to be so much fun, but there were some people were like, oh, man, it's not worth my time to try, or whatever. And it just killed the spirit. And then you've got games that are just dumb little adventures. I remember when we were on a trip and we were waiting to get picked up. It was this when I was a teenager in Colorado. And so here come my cousins came up with this thing. We drew circles in the dirt and stepped off about 20 steps or so and threw rocks. It was kind of like the redneck horseshoes in which we had school. So we got all into it and we were, you know, it was intense. But it was just a domino later game. We had so much fun. And I think we need to help our students understand that. Help our teachers understand it so they can communicate with students. It's not the money, it's not the facilities, it's the attitude to get into it.
You talked about a post-school day, post-school treatment.
Right.
But my background is one new school. So there's some schools. Post-school. How do you see that today? Is there a value to that? Or I see some grades go out and sell by students. No, I'm not sure that I disagree with that, but I wonder if there's not some value in it.
Any comments or throw that? Is there value in having the whole school playing together? And he sees 5-6 students, a couple grades go out and play. But are we losing something by not having the whole school together?
We have 3 rooms, and I have the upper grades. But one recess each day, 20 minutes in the afternoon, the whole school plays together, grades 1 to 12. And that's beautiful. I see the older boys adjusting their speed for the first graders, and I see them between, in the morning or after, there's a relationship being built between the first and second graders and the upper graders that is beautiful, that you don't have if you always have them segregated into age groups. But yes, there's a lot of value, and I would try and incorporate that. The other thing we do is in our chapel groups, we have a chapel every Monday morning, is we have them divided. The teachers do it at the beginning of the year, so you have a first grader sitting beside a 10th grader or something like that. You know, they follow their older students.
How many students have been in your chapel groups?
About the size of our bench. We have 19 students in 3 chapel groups. Okay. 6 or 7.
Yeah, we also use chapel groups. That's something I was going to mention. As a way to help break down the stratification that seems to happen with the age groups. We usually have 4 or 5 in a group, and the idea is when it's time for chapel, they fill up the chapel group, they make sure they have what they need, and if they need to go get a drink or whatever, they check in, and they're basically taking care of them. It helps the older students step up their game, and it gives the older students something to look up to and a connection more than just the teacher. I feel like it's been a real asset, because then when we're having all school freeze or doing things with the whole school, some of the younger students like, this is something you have a connection with, and then they'll cross that age stratification much easier. And we also use it for other things sometimes. I think on field trips, break them off for lunch, take your chapel group, and 2 older students want to be together, that's fine, just take your chapel groups with them. And so it gives everybody a place to be, and we don't have to try to sort through which clip I'm going to be with. At some point.
So on the chapel, how's that structure? As far as the
so the teachers organize it. So they don't actually do chapels, but it's a way of seeing the students. So the bell goes and it's time for morning chapel. The way our school structure, we have one of the dads has devotions. Monday morning, each room does their own thing, Tuesday and Thursday. And Wednesday morning, we have singing for chapel. So basically, Mondays and Wednesdays that they would be together. So the bell goes, it's the first thing we do. So then each group leader goes over to the separate classrooms and collects their people. And then they go sit down because of a little family group. They choose where to sit. And then sometimes I'll draft of 2 groups to help put benches away, because we use that same play area for every half separate chapter. Okay. So and basically the teachers we get our heads together and say, what combinations are going to work well, and what combinations are going to produce growth. So maybe it's not always just about working well. I remember one year we had a high school student that he was doing well, but he could have stepped up his game a little bit. So we gave him free routing for first and second grade boys. And yeah, it was good stuff.
Yes. You also have the option of having that chapel group do a chapel.
Right.
Friday mornings, once a month, the three chapel groups take turns, and a high school student meets out, and they plan the whole chapel. So that works.
Which is another excellent idea. We do a little bit of work we have. I think because we have the chapel groups, we have them work together, and they plan and get other people to do things, and try to use everybody in the chapel group. Sometimes they'll do some Bible skits or
get the school parents sometimes.
Yeah, it's maybe not always the most efficient way to start your day, but the students really enjoy it, and it's an opportunity for growth. And so, you know, our vision for school, I believe, needs to be not so much to get X amount of academic pages done every year, but we want to grow our students. So some of these other things, it can almost feel inefficient sometimes, but keep a vision for the big picture and what the product is we're trying to develop. And it's, you know, I'm a huge fan of chapter groups. It's a very good thing for us. Yes, sir.
So when I went to school, I have an honor school. And there was a group in the grade one space. What he did is everybody got together in the morning for production. The teachers paired everybody up. The other students always paired up with the younger ones. We were responsible, like, we sang, we would help them find a song. It was their turn to pick a song, we would help them, you know, pick a song. And that, any events, like, we had our school right beside the robot field. Flood, we grew up in Southern Ontario, so we freestyle skating. When we went skating on the post, we were always responsible to make sure that your partner, or we call them partners, but not all your partners, to make sure that they would have the skates, we would help them, you know, post across the road, we'd help them over the road, put the skates on, and everything, then we would free go. And, you know, looking back when I was in those shoes, I was kind of like, you know, let's skate. You know, the faster you get over the road, the longer we can skate. But like your back was a good experience, you know, you kind of brought everybody along.
You brought everybody along, and it developed, especially the older students, an awareness and a caring for other people's needs.
Yeah,
and
the children need tying skates.
Yeah, otherwise you spend the whole time tying skates. Yes?
Do you keep the same chapter group all year long?
We do. We wouldn't necessarily have to, but we generally do. And then if for some reason the oldest student isn't there, then the next oldest student steps up and we dealt with it. Yes?
We call it play groups at our school, but it's this whole idea has totally revolutionized school. I would highly recommend doing something like this. The cliques, all that pretty much disappeared. The little ones, first graders, kindergarten, they're not so afraid to hang out with the big boys or big girls. We would have every quarter, and then we'd have what we call a fun day or whatever. But yeah, you start out, the upper graders, to be in charge of their multiple groups. Five, six different groups actually. We had sitting together at chapel, the fun days would be in charge. Then the teachers, you know, it's their job. And at the end of the year, the order, the leader, a lot of times they buy them a little trinket or give them a gun or a little gift. It's a big deal. Talk about switching your culture in your school, do this. I highly recommend this.
Yeah. Good input. Did y'all hear that? Yes.
On number two, there you mentioned how a small school has a greater opportunity for class discussions. And I had recently substituted in our own grade group. And I was a little bit disheartened to realize how
It's very efficient, but I'm not sure if it's the healthiest way. Somebody else has some about that, has more wisdom than I do, or different experience. So the question is, she did some substituting and was concerned with how unaccustomed the upper grade students were with upgrade textbooks and having a teacher teach class discussion, exchanging ideas type of thing. Is that something to be concerned about, or is that a good model of just self-study? Any input?
I think back to when I was in Bible school, and we had a very structured set of classes, but then in the evening we would have a study hall where students, the boys and the girls had separate study halls, but they'd get together to do their homework, and often discussions would break out, and sometimes the teachers would even come around. And I think back to that being some of the most stretching times, if I can say it that way. There's a lot of value in picking each other's brains, but especially if you have a teacher around them that can sort of guide the discussion. I think that's excellent.
Yes.
In our group, we call it the meeting after the meeting. There's a board meeting, council meeting, whatever, and it's already in discussion, and then afterward, whether it's a change of people or atmosphere or something, all of a sudden, the discussion happens. So sometimes it's just drawing out the quiet ones or practice or whatever. But yeah, we call it the meeting after the meeting where it's discussion really happens.
In a small school, you're not always going to have equal time to have a class and to spend a lot of time discussing stuff. But at our school, we have kind of a hybrid. The teacher might have a 10-minute class and then dismiss it with a work. But there's still some articulating of ideas and some back and forth, and I think it's good. We don't do a practice of that. But the student needs to learn how to articulate the concepts that are being taught. And there's value in the interaction between teacher and student. But you have to be careful as a teacher, you don't pick your favorite subject, you take it twice as long as the other ones. Yes, I do feel it's valuable to have interaction between students and teachers.
Thanks for that. Yes.
There's two sides to this coin. I've been to both sides. One is independent learning is something that they need to have for their lifetime. So there's a danger in teachers spoon feeding too much in class time. And just like Brother said here, in small schools, we don't have time to teach every class. So we have certain things that we teach, and then certain things that they work independently. And we call it a hybrid, and I think we try to get the best of both.
Yeah. And I guess one thought I would share with that is, you're thinking about the school being the owner of the church, so if we want these students to be able to be comfortable with articulating thoughts and having a discussion in Sunday school, then let's make it comfortable at school. You know what I'm saying? So I think it's something that is important to be developed. But again, you don't have the teacher resources to do that with every class, and not everybody learns the same way. But especially maybe some subjects that lend themselves more to that are history, Bible, a few of those where they can, it gives a platform where they can ask questions. They can wrestle through stuff. The teachers are just always giving them answers. But, well, what do you think? If you were in X situation, what would you have done? How would your beliefs and convictions change what you did in the situation compared to the person in history? We've had some really good discussions, and I think it takes discernment on the teacher's part, and maybe you can give them a little bit of direction with that. I think there's a time to maybe go outside of the box with the lesson or subject matter and work it through. But if you do that every time, you really frustrate your students who don't have much time to get their school up. some parents say, you need to have less class because they can't get their stuff done. And we need to respect what they're talking about. I think we need to do some of that. I feel like that's important. And I know that's, those have shaped me, those discussions as a young person. And I think it was Steve Dubick who said he can tell you a lot of things he learned and remembers things up to, was it sixth grade, seventh grade, and then went to a socially public school setting to individualize, where he grew on his own. And he said he can tell you a lot of stuff that happened outside of his school, but he doesn't remember much of the actual stuff that he did. I think part of it is that interacting with the material series helps us internalize it. Helps us is dealing with it. Yes?
I was going to answer the question. Unique ways our school does whatever, mm-hmm. and we just come through our shop in the net class. I went to school every Wednesday for a couple quarters, walked to the neighbor's farm for an hour about the time you get started, you're back home. And so we did the past weekend, Thursday, Friday, Monday, Tuesday, 7 through 12, which is 20 students. All the girls do a mat together, 7 through 10. So a four-year program in 4 years. Then the boys do 2 years of shop and welding and electrical work. So, you know, I could easily, you know, cut out one day where I was at, you know, helping at the welding shop. I don't know how to weld a bit, but cut out the welding shop rather than, you know, that every Wednesday, you know, 1 hour a day. And then obviously, then about in the 12th graders, they did some career day, follow along a career person.
Excellent idea. Somebody else.
I use my classroom sometimes is I have a time right after recess, I have to set that aside for discussion. Because classes are usually fairly small and then there's a few more people that sometimes I'll ask a question and I say, well, why don't we ask the class that question and wait until right after recess and have this time? And then I try to kind of guide the discussion during that time and sometimes incorporate some of the lesson stuff into that. Come back and talk about anything as well. It's kind of a set of our time for discussion.
Yeah, excellent.
I was just going to do the same thing. We use lunch break for college lunch. You know, even steer discussion. That's very easy lunch. We'll keep it for sure.
Yeah. And that kills several words in one stone. Yeah. I'm not talking about, you know, the quarterback. Yeah. How many people in the buddy groups? We have buddy groups, chapel groups. The school this gentleman came from, they pair one or two from the university. We have generally five-ish, give or take. You guys do
six
or seven, and
four to six.
So it needs to be small enough that it's personable, but large enough that you don't have, well, I guess you guys did pairs if it didn't work out. Anyway. Yes?
It's a good way to pick up if you have a game that, you know, group two is going to be dead, or one, two, three is going to be on one team and one the other. You use it so many ways.
Yeah, and the more you utilize it, it's, it becomes comfortable and the students are okay with it. It's a quick way to divide things up. Depending on the field trip, we'll use it that way. Sometimes we have more age-specific interests when it's divided by grades, but it's, yeah, it's a good way to, it's just a good thing, I think. Somebody else who's started, yes?
In addition to the chapel groups, at the beginning of the year, we also make two play groups where we make two teams. So when the whole school plays together, they don't have to take a number off or something. You know, our school teams, whether like prisoners base or circle base or any of that, they have their teams, they know who they're on. So that's all ready to go.
Yeah, I feel like that alleviates a lot of, what's the word, drama, maybe? If the teacher gives direction for that instead of the students doing it. A lot of times I'll get, in our school, I'll get some of the older boys to give some input just to help them have some ownership in it. You know, feel like they can contribute We don't let them script to do it. Kids
don't ever let them just pick up teams.
So what?
Don't ever let them pick up teams publicly.
Right.
Because it's always the same person who selects.
Yeah. Did research for the clicks and bullying talk, but I came across some information. And this is talking about adults. Clicks in the workplace is the name of the article. And the author said, anytime you let your employees make their own groups, you're setting them up for bullying and clicks. I was like, I bet that applies to school students too. So just something for your pass on. Yeah.
Okay, resources and volunteers. One thing our school has done for the last 15 years at least, it's now official, but he has taught school for a couple of years. But even prior to that, he had started teaching Bible class. So he has, for the last 15 years, he has taught Bible for 7, 8, 9, 10, probably once a week. And that has been just a very good experience for us. Just helps him to build a rapport with the young people. Even like our high school boys that worry about in class, that he just felt like he got to speak with them. At the end of a lot of class, he just said, like to talk to them. And was able to lead the boys along. And so it's just that those are the ways we can use outside resources for our music class as well. We have a brother and sister. So there's ways like that you can bring in volunteers from outside. Sure, about the Bible class, you have a pastor from your church that is interested in that. It's an excellent opportunity to bring that into the
world. Back to your question about building value in the community. If you can let more of the community get ownership, the school is going to be good. We do a number of special days, rewards, and the honorable parties, that kind of stuff. And so it spread the teachers very thin, and we're like, the different parents said, oh, we'd be glad to help, but, well, you always feel bad. You don't want to impose on people. And so what we finally started doing the last number of years is the beginning, our PTF, Parent Teacher Fellowship, right at the beginning of the year, we all just made an announcement saying, any of you that would like to help, would like to volunteer for stuff, just make sure you're on this list. You're not saying you're going to be available, but it gives us the freedom to call up and say, hey, would it suit you to help with whatever? If it doesn't work, that's fine. But we know we have a group of people that like the idea, that don't mind us checking with them, and that's what we're involved. Because that way we don't feel like we're teacher said, I need help, so I guess I have to go do this. No, these are people that say, hey, we want to be engaged, we want to help out where we can. And then you feel free to call them. If we need use, we'll call them. Yes?
And, I think that the thought too is that, when I volunteer music, it's so totally dependent on what you're strengthening a lot, whether it feels like a drudgery or this is what I would want for, And if you can tap into parent who would love to help with a certain thing, which we got that on the science part, it's such a big deal. That's when you're actually doing the service and you can bless people.
Yes.
So, in our school, we have a little situation where, I guess, the parents are down in school differently a little bit. And so, one dad said, I'm going to go out of probably for 8th grade, dad said, I'm not going to go out of school. Is that okay? Do we, the board, accept that? Or does that affect the school call? Because the concern is the school call, how it affects the other boys. And, we can have a negative impact.
They're concerned with epidemic. Yeah. Any comments on that? You're talking to him. He was done with 8th grade and then pulled
out. No, 8th grade decided
the boy had some behavioral issues, you can say. Mm-hmm. And so that's that point needed to go. And there's a point that lets them have that, you know, a boy needs some work. But he also needs an education. And so, you know, I guess it depends on parents' value in school. But how much of that should be allowed? As a school board allow, you know, a parent to decide that their boys or their child put in school well enough for, and then that affects the larger school culture. And, you know, the younger ones look and go and say, well, you know, and we don't really like school. School's a discipline. School's a discipline. And so should we set something that's just here? Is that something that's known? I don't know, is so many grades? Or is there, should there be some allowance?
I think we need to be careful with that, because otherwise we can leave the feeling that school is for girls and little boys. And that's not a compelling call for them to invest in education. Anybody want to speak to that issue you raised? Dropping out of, yeah.
There's just something in me that kind of revolts against that. This whole idea of a school where something gets tough, we just quit and try something else. That really sets up a precedent for other things in life. If life gets tough, you just quit and do something else. To me, it'd be, you know, if you start the year, you finish the year. Where that grade is, where it's 8th grade, 9th grade, whatever that is, if you start something, finish it, that's
And I think it depends on the legal situation. I think if I understand that in Ohio, we have to go complete 8th grade or go to 16. There's an Amish exemption to children, quite sure that one. So I think that needs to be a board decision. I think we need to give respect to the parents that don't make their decisions. But if you could give kind of an overarching policy where they can decide what's best for their child within the guidelines that the board works up. It feels a little bit arbitrary to say, you know, everybody needs to go to this place. Our school has developed a pretty good culture of at least doing some high school. Very few of them stop right at 8th grade, although we have more of them that are planning to do that in the near future. But if you can, develop that culture, encourage people to. I want to also be sensitive to what the student wants and what the parents want for their student. So we have some students say, I'm not going to finish high school, but I want to do 9th and 10th grade because I want to learn this, this, and this. And so I'm like, hey, you know, high school, you don't have to do high school to be successful. I think it's an asset, but we're there to serve the parents. What do you want? And one thing that I had to help parents understand is that school is a tremendous opportunity to grow your child's character. Okay? There are so many things that correlate, doing life, doing school. But the things, by and large, will make you successful in school, also make you successful in life. Discipline, being responsible, getting your things done when you need them. But I have had parents who were pretty convinced that the problem with the child, the problem with school. So if we can just get rid of school and life would be great, but it doesn't work that way.
Well, that's what I was wondering about. I just feel like we need to legislate something. Kind of tell the legislation that we can't execute on something we don't legislate. Mm-hmm. And so the path just got open ended. And then, you know, different parents see it differently, so they choose to operate on it differently, and then it becomes a very small school, small setting. It really puts a lot of pressure on everyone else. And I just wonder sometimes the board we should legislate because the way it would be. If you want to go longer than that, that's fine, but here's the minimum. Because the minimum obviously should be the state requirement. Because for us not to follow the state requirement is not being a very good test. But you need to put that in legislation so that then you can execute on it. That's what I see.
I think you got a good point.
You need to go talk to Norwich Shank from Hickory Hollow School in Harrisonburg. they have an interesting way to do high school.
Can you tell us a little about it?
They do 3 days a week. Once they hit ninth grade, I think he's here, and I saw him walk in. He spoke in our PTA, he's not in this room. He spoke at our PTA a couple weeks ago. So the Weaverland, it's the Weaverland Commons Church thing, and a lot of them are farmers and feed their boys at home. And he said when they went to a 3 day high school, most of them walk in.
The options to structure.
Yes.
The, what was the name of the group?
It's Norwood Shank from Harrisonburg, Hickory Hollow School.
Norwood Shank from Hickory Hollow. They were getting feedback from the parents, the agricultural community. They wanted, they needed their boys at home to help with the work. So they worked with a 3 day a week model. So for high school, it's just ninth grade, attend school 3 days a week. And he said that a lot of them finished high school.
Yeah.
Alleviate that. So is that 3 consecutive days or so?
I think so, but I'm not.
Monday, Wednesday, Friday.
Monday, Wednesday, Friday. So one on the wall.
The other thing that they benefit from then is they get men from the community, from the church, come in and maybe just teach a math class Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Either they take time off of their job. They don't necessarily have full-time teachers, so they get a lot more.
You know, they saw the community, invest in the community.
Now, this may be a totally different question here, but it's one that I had. We struggle with a little bit trying to find a field trip that works for the whole school. When you have 20, 25 students, you don't really want to break it up. And that may be a little bit geographic. But I'd like some ideas on what other people do. Because going to the zoo for a high school is boring. And yet going to a museum for a first grader can be as we had. It's one of the challenges.
Any thoughts on that? Challenge is finding a field trip that resonates with everybody. You're from about 20, 25 students who don't want to break up into separate destinations. Yeah.
One thing that we do is every other year, we take our high school, we go to like Nashville to the capital. So it's a little more their level, and they go on a separate day than the other ones. And so then the off year, the school would go together, but then we take our high school that year, we take them to vacations at the high school trip. So there's kind of two incentives there. One is there's some works for high school. So there you get, a 2 day off, you know, for that trip. So there's some perks there for that. But what we found really worked well was every other year just combining the school. So that way you have never one thing go to something to look more their level of occasional ones or something like that. That's all already. Or else we get 3.5 hour drive on the way, so it's a little.
I guess the school board of also really strong in the last few years since. We've had actually 6 school boards because they were supported conservation and they didn't do our mask. And so, as one of the people that had to do before, it was a challenge. Now, I tried to tell the outcomes, listen, you're going to struggle the first and second grade to find this interesting. So, I did the school tour. I wanted to try to keep that in mind. This might interest this group. And so, I think creating this can work. But it, as a tour guide, it's a little bit, I was really blessed though with how many people, when they made a special effort to do something with this school, even though it was maybe a conventional.
Yeah, that's right. Anybody else have any problem? Or field trip, yes.
Well, one thing we do at our school now, granted we have 10 students, and they're especially across the grade 7 at this point. And we try to, switch off. Sometimes 1 year gravitate more towards school, once yes or 5 year above the upper levels. But, and then vice versa, we're looking at their level and push stretch for
everyone, regardless, yes, it might be a little bit above your level or below your level, but you know, hey, we're in this together, let's try to have fun doing
it. A little bit like the playing games thing, I think applies to the field trip thing, if problem. I mean, you're totally the attitude of our students that, you know, whatever we do is going to be fun, it doesn't seem very far out. It won't make it work, we're going to have a good time. Yeah, I've seen field trips that I thought would be really amazing, and they're just doing it. Because the students didn't have a good attitude about it. And then some field trips are like, oh, man. Well, we usually do the parents in charge of finding it, and we do crowd control and handle the logistics. So we're like, oh, they're not sure if we can pull this one out of this thing. This is going to be rough. It's amazing. But it goes back to the students' attitudes. And so you can help your teachers understand that and try to sell it. You know, we're doing this together. Yeah, some of it may not mesmerize you. You know, you go to a museum, the younger ones are done in 10 minutes. Old ones can spend an extra hour. But it's just one of those challenges that comes with it. One of the things that we do for field trips is every other year, we do what we call Nature Night, and then we'll use chapel groups for that and have a list of things the students are supposed to find. And so it's just like a random. So usually, we used to do tinfoils, like nothing, something unusual, put in fire, but then when we had to end up with this giant, huge fire, you know, whatever else, just go ahead and not done as much as you. Much simpler when you have 50 people with you. But then they'll go through the woods and it's something that everybody can enjoy and treat.
One thing we do, we have up in Ohio, we have a farm and science review. And any ag or thing like that, the little kids love it, and the big kids love it, the machinery and everything else. So you can find things like that. It will bring everybody together. And also with the chapel groups, we don't do that. I would love it. I never liked the early concept before. But that would help your anything you do. If you have that concept, the older ones will be okay with doing something that's not quite as cool because they're already used to taking care of these little guys. I love that. I appreciate that.
Well, I think we're out of time, but thanks so much for your input. Let's use you to go back and ask us about it. Thanks.